going on? Happy Sunday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the game from Saturday afternoon. Reds taking on the Mets, game 2 of 3 at Great American Ballpark. We pick it up in the bottom of the second. Jamer Candelario doubled to left field. The doubled is in air quotes because it had a catch probability of 96%. But Tyrone Taylor looked like he got lost in the sun and then slipped. Next batter up, Jake Fraley moved Candelario over with a ground out. And then Ellie De La Cruz hit a hard ground ball that Mets second baseman Jeff McNeil could not field. Made it 1-0 Reds. Spencer Cyr singled. And then with two outs, Tyler Stevenson walked to load the bases, and then Jonathan India walked to bring in another run to make it 2-0. Nick Martinez, the Reds' starting pitcher on Saturday, looked pretty good through the first three innings, and he took a 2-0 lead into the fourth inning. He then unfortunately loaded the bases, but was still a pitch away from getting out of that inning, but then he gave up a single to Omar Narvaez and a double to Brandon Nimmo, and just like that, the Reds trailed 4-2. Martinez got bit again with two outs in the fifth inning when he gave up an RBI double to Tyrone Taylor, making it 5-2 Mets. But then the Rally Reds got going in the bottom of the sixth. Ellie De La Cruz started the two-out rally with a walk. Spencer Steer was hit by a pitch. And then David Bell elected to go to Stuart Fairchild off the bench to pinch hit for Nick Martini. Fairchild smoked a single to right field, making it a 5-3 game. The Reds then stole another run when Stuart Fairchild took off for second base. Spencer Steer, who was on third base, took off for home on the throw, and that throw was slightly offline to second base. Steer scored easily, and the Reds were just down 5-4 now. Reds still had a chance in the inning, though. Tyler Stevenson at the plate had a pretty decent at-bat, but he really got squeezed on a strike three pitch that was well out of the zone, a pretty brutal call against Tyler Stevenson. Reds bullpen really kept the Reds in this one. Buck Farmer threw two scoreless innings. Emilio Pagan threw a scoreless eighth. And then in the bottom of the eighth, Jamer Candelario had a leadoff walk. Jake Fraley struck out, but fortunately for the Reds, the ball got past Mets catcher Omar Narvaez, and that put runners on the corners with no one out. Ellie De La Cruz then had an excuse me swing that the ball was just placed perfectly in between the third baseman and the shortstop. Ellie De La Cruz, on the very weak hit, extended his hit streak to 13 games, and we were tied at 5 with runners on first and third. Ellie De La Cruz then stole second base, but that didn't really matter because Spencer Steer hit a ball 400 feet, putting the Reds up 8-5. The Reds weren't done. This was just a wild inning. Stuart Fairchild had a bunt single. Not really the best bunt, but it was placed in the right spot. Tyler Stevenson singled. Jonathan India walked. And then a Christian Encarnacion strand sack fly put the Reds up 9-5. Alexis Diaz came in the top of the ninth. He did give one run back, but it never got too stressful. And the Reds won 9-6 to improve to 5-3 on the season, with another big comeback win. Here's what Spencer Steer had to say after the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously home runs are a nice bonus, but I think we, that's just kind of who we are as a team. We're going to put balls in play, put pressure on the defense. I think it's kind of been the motto, I guess, from day one, with how much speed we have, and I think that's a great way for us to, you know, speed's never going to slump. So if we can make stuff happen, stealing bases and putting the ball in play, I think we're going to be happy with the result.
As big as the rally was in the 7th inning, when Ellie works that walk and get things started, you guys in the back pitch, I believe it was, how big was that, two outs to get everything going?
Yeah, just like I said, finding a way to get on base, and especially with how much speed and how much distraction Ellie causes on the base paths, I think that can be an advantage as a hitter. They're so worried about what he's doing on the bases. You know, pitchers can leave mistakes over the middle of the plate. And I think Stu did a great job, you know, getting us back in that game. It really felt like we were a little dead in the water there, and Stu kind of brought some life back into us. And, you know, the rest is history.
Kind of an under the radar impact for Bubba Thompson. What's there out about him on the team?
I think it's impressive how ready he is. It seems like every time he comes in the game, he's ready to make an impact, and he's made a big impact on a lot of games so far. Like I said earlier, him getting that bag, that was huge. So I think how prepared he is and just how he goes about his business every day, it's very impressive.
Here's Reds manager David Bell first on Spencer Steer, and then a little later on Bubba Thompson and the great work on Saturday from the Reds bullpen.
The experience he got the last couple of years, a swing that seems to be on balance every time, the hard work he puts in, are we just seeing the stars align for him right now?
Yeah, he's been doing it for a while now, going back to last season, and he's always been a good player, you know, even before we got him, but just continues to mature and develop and gain even more confidence in himself. He's always been confident what he does at the plate and in the field, but you know, you have success over and over again, and you know, he's really believing no matter who he's facing, no situation's too big, and he wants to be up in those spots.
We've talked a lot about the versatility of your roster, and now this year you add in a Bubba Thompson who's seemingly involved in every game, or at least your victories. As a manager, that has to be a really good weapon for you.
It is. You know, we've talked about to get through the season and, you know, through the regular season and beyond, it's going to take all 26 plus players, and it's really important to us. It's the way I see it. Our players understand that, and our players are doing a great job of, if they're not starting, they're staying ready to come in. They're doing everything they can. They're studying. They're ready to come in and impact the game, and that's exactly what Bubba is doing. You know, he's been part of every game. He finally got his first at bat today, which is kind of surprising because it feels like he's been a part of everything. But our, you know, it says a lot about our guys coming off the bench. You know, our bullpen, the guys that are starting, the at bats. They come in and have off the bench pinch hitting, which is a tough job. Stu did it today, but definitely Bubba has made the absolute most of every opportunity.
Bullpen pick up Martinez today.
Yeah, I mean they did for sure. You know, starting with Buck, I really felt like Nick was in complete command, and that outing definitely could have gone different for him. There's a couple pitches that go a different way, and it's a completely different outcome for Nick. So, yeah, he had all his pitches working, and you know, sometimes give credit to the hitters there, but definitely could have been a different result. So, and then the bullpen, like you said, came in, and Buck, probably the best he's been all year, right there, and that was an important outing for Buck and for us.
And lastly, here's Saturday's starting pitcher, Nick Martinez.
Honestly, I thought I fudged it up pretty bad pretty early, and these guys came back and picked me up, and, you know, it's something that these guys do very well. They're never scared of a moment and never back down, and put together some really good at-bats and got me off the hook today.
It seemed like you were one out away, yeah. All five runs. Is that any more frustrating for you when you're that close in those particular situations?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, sure. couple pitches there that weren't executed, and both were two-seamers. Yeah. Yeah, I felt good about our game plan, and kind of unfolded there pretty quickly, and was able to finish the fifth, and got, I mean, not much to say, really.
Kind of going back on the fun team and all that thing, you know, Spencer was up there and he was talking about when Ellie's on, sometimes the pitchers can look too much, and like, yeah. Bubba, the same thing.
Right.
You know, is that a real thing for a pitcher?
Absolutely. Knowing you got a guy that can steal bags and be in scoring position, even with two outs, you know, it's, those are some stressful pitches. Yeah.
Both of your starts have had pretty dramatic comebacks.
Yeah, I'm really putting myself in a hole in these games here.
But it's a good feeling knowing that you take the mound and, you know.
Yeah, that's what, again, that's what's real special about this team is that you're never really out of it, and these guys don't. They take their at-bats very personal, and they're never really out of it. And, you always have a shot with these guys.
Well, our deep drive of the game for a second straight day goes to, of course, Spencer Steer and his 400-foot home run. Hit 101.9 off the bat, and that home run increased the Reds' win probability up to 97.5%. And our deep drive of the game, sponsored, as always, by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. All right, checking on scores around the NL Central. Brewers lost 5-3 to the Mariners. The Pirates won 5-4 over the Orioles. O'Neill Cruz had a walk-off single in the 10th inning. Pirates actually blew a 3-0 lead early in this game. The Dodgers beat the Cubs 4-1, and the St. Louis Cardinals won 3-1 over the winless 0-9 Miami Marlins. The Cardinals got 5 shutout innings from Steven Matz. So in the NL Central, Pirates leading the way at 7-2, Brewers 5-2, Reds and Cubs 5-3, Cardinals 5-4. Yes, all 5 teams in the NL Central are above 500, and the Cardinals, they're above 500 actually for the first time since April 3rd, 2023. All right, well, here is myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. Stay tuned at the end. I'll recap all the Reds minor league action on Saturdays. I think there was quite a bit of interesting things to follow along there. And then, of course, I'll preview Sunday's rubber matchup between the Reds and the Mets.
All right, Nick. That's a big win. I know, listen, over 162, we say this all the time. Oh, this is a big win. That's a big win. Vibes were starting to kind of slip a little around here. Now, I know if you hang around on the X.com app, a lot of times it's not a very good indicative way of living your life. You can kind of get yourself fooled into thinking what's reality versus what's not reality. But genuinely, I did think, Nick, this was probably a good spot for them to have a nice come-from-behind win to keep the little, what we'll call, somewhat positive momentum they've had this start of the year.
Yeah, that's a couple wins already. Yeah, that game on Sunday they stole from the Nats. They won the game in extra innings against the Phillies. So three of the Reds' 5 wins have been either comebacks or, you know, really tough-fought wins. So, yeah, I mean, this was a big one, though. You don't really want to be staring down a sweep at the first game of your 7-game homestand that they found a way today. They capitalized on a few fortunate things that happened. Capitalized on the Mets, I guess, letting the poor guy out there to die on the mound, and they found a way to get her done.
That they did. I'm going to put my hand up again here, and I'll start the show off by saying I was not fortunate enough to see the first few innings. So I did see the vast majority of the game. I seen most of the big plays. I did miss Ellie's. I guess he dropped a pickoff attempt or something. People were mad about. I don't know. At this point, I'm just going to say it out loud. I'm going to give Ellie the benefit of the doubt for quite some time, largely because I feel like it's the best option no matter what. So what's the point in sitting here and drilling our heads up against a wall when there's really not another option? You know, if Matt McClain was healthy and Nuelve Marte was healthy, then I probably would sit up here and want to debate that maybe a little more often than not. But you know what? That's not the case. So what's the point? We're wasting our time. Ellie De La Cruz is the shortstop, and let's just hope he continues to find ways to get better, and I'll leave it at that.
That throw was on Nick Martinez, that pickoff attempt. It was a terrible throw.
Well, if it wasn't, you would have said it was on Nick Martinez regardless. You're like an Ellie stan.
Yes, I'm sorry that I support the Reds' future. All right.
Don't say it.
I bit my tongue.
Favorite thing about Spencer Steer in that home run was He kind of pimped it a little bit, gave it a nice little bat toss, and it went out. I mean, I'm not downplaying the home run, but it did go out like 2 rows deep. So he knows. He's got good distance control. The man knows when it's gone and when it's not. I don't know where to start today because there's so many things that we can talk about, And there's one thing that I said before the show started that I teased, and I said, I think of all of the guys that made a major difference in that, I guess we'll call it the bottom of the eighth, I think it was Bubba Thompson. And I'll tell you why. Because of all of the guys, like, let's just give some flowers out today. You know, let's act like it's a nice Saturday. It's 50 degrees, 55 degrees. The sun's shining. This is a beautiful day today to have a wedding. We're going to have a little bit of a Chatterbox Reds wedding today. We're going to give our flowers out to a lot of folks, and we're going to start with Bubba Thompson right now. Bubba Thompson was kept on this team by David Bell. Oh, flowers, David Bell. David Bell made the decision. He's staying with us. We're not going to go, and I'm not taking anything away from the other guys. Listen, Mike Ford, maybe he hits a couple home runs. He helps win a game. Maybe so, but he didn't. He kept Bubba Thompson. You know why he kept Bubba Thompson? For what happened today. Like, the exact reason that he was on this roster was because of what happened today. And if you don't remember, maybe you got a sluggish brain, or maybe you didn't get a chance to see the game. What I'll tell you is what happened is Bubba Thompson came in the game for one reason, and that was to steal second base. Shout out to Jamier Candelario. He got on base on a walk. Here comes Bubba Thompson. They know he's stealing. They throw a pitch out, and they throw a pretty good ball to second base, and he still beats it. So he's got elite speed. He gets to second base. That forces already some discomfort from the guy on the mound. That ultimately, in my opinion, again, I'm not trying to give all the credit to Bubba here, but that, in my opinion, led to the pass ball for Fraley. If nobody's on, I think that ball gets blocked by the catcher. But instead, he's worried about trying to pick it and or worry about making sure he can throw out Bubba Thompson at third base. So he loses his concentration. Pass ball, and then that started the floodgates of everything else that happened. Ellie was next, if I remember right. That ball, if it's hit in a normal situation, it's probably not a hit, but since they were shifted in the way they were, it was a hit. So I'm not trying to give, I guess I am, but I'm just saying sometimes it's a small domino that affects the whole entire inning, and Bubba Thompson deserves a ton of credit, and you know who put him out there? David Bell. So they both get their flowers. End of rant.
Yeah, they found a way to use Bubba Thompson effectively. Unfortunately, he didn't get a stolen base. Didn't get credited with a stolen base on that one because they called a balk, even though he would have been safe either way. But to your point on Bubba, I think the whole Reds running game today, I felt like it made a big impact. Stuart Fairchild stealing that base. They got Spencer Steerholm, stole that run to make it 5-4. Ellie De La Cruz, you saw kind of what he can do on the bases, just going first to third with ease. And Trace, this is when the Reds feel like they're at their best offensively, is when they're causing havoc, when they're just a tough team to play against. Rallying, never being out of a game. It's not just like a fun thing in Cincinnati. It's a reputation. When I watched the TBS broadcast the other night,
fake TNT.
They were talking about it. This team, they're never out of a game. And it's fun to be a fan of a team that has that reputation and a team that wrecks havoc on the base paths. And those two things are when this team is at their best.
All right, let's get into it in a little more formal fashion here. Nick Martinez obviously started this game. I don't know where you stand on him. I think Nick Martinez has been throwing the ball great. And I'm not trying to make an out for him. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I just don't think that he's... you know where I'm going with this, and I'm not going to belabor the point because anybody that watches the show is tired of hearing me say it, but I just don't think he's been put in the position in which will make him a great, or great's a strong word. Let's say good big leaguer. I don't think he's a good big leaguer by being a starting pitcher. I think he'll be a good big leaguer as a bullpen guy, and that's where he's going to be soon. I really do believe that. So again, not going to get overblown on maybe what happened in the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings with Martinez pretty much for the rest of the year, because I don't think we're going to have to worry about that all too often. But your overall thoughts on him? I did miss, like I said, the first few innings, so I can't really speak on it.
Well, you missed his best part. He actually looked really good the first couple innings. I agree. I do think that you probably need to move him to the bullpen. I think it's probably decided. Now, Andrew Abbott could go out and just absolutely get rocked tomorrow and get rocked his next start, and we completely feel different.
Right.
But right now, I think you're there. I do think Nick Martinez is capable of being a big league starting pitcher. Like, if he was on the St. Louis Cardinals, he's probably in that rotation. If he's on some of the other teams.
He could be a fifth starter or something.
Like, I don't want to say like he's not a a big league starter, because I think he has the potential to be there. I think he probably deserves more of a chance. But that's the good thing about where the Reds are right now. They don't need him to be a big league starter. It's nice to have that luxury that, hey, we could throw him in the bullpen. I still think he's capable, if the opportunity presents itself later in the year, that he could go on a run if he needs to be moved in the rotation and be a quality starting pitcher. It was kind of the same thing today as it was in the first start. Every run that he allowed today was with two outs. He was close. He struck out, I think, six batters. Like, he has some swing and miss stuff. He just hasn't been able to get those last outs, those finishing touches. Probably a lot of that is just being a guy that's not really started a whole lot over his big league career. So I think he's capable of being a starter, but I think it's wonderful that the Reds don't have to have him be a starter. And I do agree with you. It's probably you move him to the bullpen and that becomes a strength, but it's not just as easy as moving to the bullpen, because Sam Moll is getting close to the end of his rehab assignment. Ian Jabot started his rehab assignment yesterday. There could certainly be more injuries, but you have a bullpen without a lot of guys that have options. So if you move him to the bullpen, you're going to have some tough corresponding decisions around that.
All right. I agree. I do agree with that. The only thing I was going to add to the next bullet point here we have, obviously, which is the bullpen. You talked about Nick Martinez moving to it. Was that when you talk about coming back and a team that's capable of coming back at any time, and they're known as the Rally Reds, or it's kind of become a national kind of talking point when it surrounds this club. The reason for that, and the reason last year for that, is because the bullpen's been able to kind of withstand or hold and give this team a chance or a puncher's chance towards the end of the game. And they did that time and time and time again last year, and they obviously did it again today. You mentioned Buck Farmer. You know, hey, listen, I think in my mind, Buck Farmer is like 1A, 1B with Antone of the guys that I don't trust. So anytime you get something out of Farmer, in my opinion, it's like, what is it? What do they say? It's icing on the cake, I think is the term they use. But your overall thoughts on just the bullpen in general, I guess, today?
I mean, yeah, Buck Farmer, I said it before we actually started the official show, but
right.
Those two innings that he threw today were huge. I mean, that was absolutely a game. I think when he came in, the Reds were down 3 runs. So it was kind of, okay, this is Buck's kind of, you know, mop-up role. And if Buck had came in and gave up a couple runs, we probably wouldn't even really been all that mad at Buck Farmer. Just like, whatever, it is what it is. This wasn't our day, blah, blah, blah. You move on. But he threw 2 shutout innings, kept the team in the game, gave the team a chance to come back. And then Emilio Pagan, he struggled early this year, but he looked much better today. He got through a scoreless inning. And then Alexis Diaz, ever since that first blown save, I mean, yeah, he did give up 2 base runners, but whatever. If Alexis Diaz gives up 2 base runners and gets through it, we're fine with that because that's what we expect.
Before we get to maybe the biggest topic of the day, we're going to talk about the Game Time app. You know why? Because the Game Time app is something that you should utilize if you need tickets. That's a genuine statement I just made. It's 2 clicks. You've heard this before. You can click on the All-In Pricing tab. And speaking of tickets, if you need them, you can go to the Game Time app and you can get $20 off your first purchase. That's using the code CINCY, CINCY. If you need $20 off, that's all you got to do. You got to punch it in, CINCY, CINCY, and you will be able to utilize that to your advantage, because I can tell you right now, Nick, I don't know if you've looked, ticket prices for some games that are upcoming, not all that hateful. You can get a group together, go down to the ballpark, get in there. I think Matt McClain bobblehead day tomorrow, so shout out to them. Jake Fraley's was today. Don't know if you kept up with that, but as always, please go download the Game Time app and use the code CINCY, and you will not only be helping yourself out, you'll be helping us as well. I'm going to say it for Nick, because everyone's going to think Nick's on the bandwagon here. I've always kind of just stayed in my lane. I kind of stepped back. I never really went overboard for Stu. I think Stu's a nice player. He's an okay backup. He's a serviceable outfielder against left-handed pitching. Is he someone maybe to get super excited about if he's on your team, because in the offseason you're looking to drum up some excitement? No. But he serves a purpose, and he does what he serves relatively well. I don't care who you are, what you say, his job is to be somewhat of a defensive replacement if needed, and hit left-handed pitching. He does that. He does that. And I don't know how long of a leash today gives him, but I hope it gives him plenty of leash for people to realize that there is some serviceability out of Stuart Fairchild. That's my opinion, not Nick's. You already know how Nick feels. Nick, you can speak for yourself.
I think Stuart Fairchild's got plenty of a leash because no matter what the Reds fan base thinks, Nick Martini can't hit left-handed pitching. Jake Fraley can't hit left-handed pitching. And I don't think the Reds really believe that Will Benzik can hit left-handed pitching, although they've given him some starts. So unless like a guy like Rhys Hines and Blake Dunn just absolutely take off in AAA and Stu has a massive slump, I think his spot's pretty safe. Look, he does a lot of things well. I think that the hit was a great hit, took a pitch the other way, didn't try to do too much. And I do think Stu has tried to do too much in some of these spots. Like, I'm sure it's not easy being a pinch hitter when you're only coming in facing tough, like, left-handed pit relievers. Like, you're not coming in facing, you know, back-end left-handed starters. Like, you're coming in these spots that are high-pressure spots, and it's tough to come through in those spots. So, but he had a nice at-bat. And then the stolen base, I mean, that stole a run. So just the fact that, you know, you have that in his arsenal as well, he's just another one of these guys that can wreak havoc on the base pass. And I think that's the reason the Reds won this game today, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, the Steer home run. But yeah. I think getting to that Steer home run, just some of their ability to just, you know, make a defense behind them, you know, have to just, you know, adjust. And even like Jeff McNeil on the ball, I know that he was trying to go home, but yeah, when you see Ellie just running down the line, I have to think that has something to do with it as well.
Yeah, that's hard to get in the mind of a player, but you're right. I mean, listen, Ellie, can I say something nice about Ellie, which is why I think it frustrates a lot of people about Ellie? Ellie, in his own way, creates his own, and it's not his problem, really, to be honest with you, unless he lets it bother him. But Ellie's ability and Ellie's eliteness in certain areas makes him susceptible to a lot of the fan base, or a majority of the fan base, being very upset with him when he struggles, because you can see what he's able to do for you. When he doesn't put the ball in play and he strikes out 50% of the time, people get upset, because even on check swings, even on slow roll or ground balls, it doesn't matter. If the ball gets put in play by Ellie, it makes for a world of complication for the defense. And I think ultimately, Ellie knows he needs to put the ball in play. But the one thing I was going to say about Ellie, and I'm glad he got the hit and all that, but one thing I was going to say about Ellie was, I hope we don't get caught between two things, right? One is being a free swinger, a guy that's very aggressive, probably doesn't swing at strikes, he swings at more balls than the average hitter would. But you know what? If you're aggressive, you can kind of get away with that at times. I almost think that can work in your favor, a la maybe the greatest player to ever be a free swinging player was Vladimir Guerrero. I'm not talking about Junior. I'm talking about the Vladimir Guerrero. The other side of the aisle is being a very patient hitter, a la Joey Votto, to where you know the strike zone very, very well. But in order to be that kind of hitter, Nick, your hand-eye or your contact rate has to be extremely high, in my opinion, because you can't take two strikes in an at-bat and then be a guy that swings and misses a bunch. You kind of need to just keep swinging, you know? Like, Ellie's probably going to get himself in a spot where if he's a free swinger again, and I'm not trying to say that they've messed him up or anything like that, but I do worry a little bit, Nick, that he's, like, overly concerned about swinging at strikes, you know? So he's very, very, sometimes it looks like there's some at-bats where he's very patient. The other night when he didn't take the bat off his shoulders, it just looked like he was trying to make sure he got a good pitch to hit. And I just hope at some point, maybe, and again, this might not be it at all, I'm just hypothetically saying it, I just want him to go back to the big swag guy. He's overly confident, whether it's fair or unfair, I don't give a damn. I want him to go up there and think that he can swing at whatever he wants to swing at, and it's probably going to work out. So, he does have a 13-game hit streak. I'm not taking anything away from that, but, you know, if you go 1-for-4, 1-for-5, 7 days in a row, and you get one hit apiece, we can all agree that's not, you know, we prefer to have it probably a little bit different. But, having said that, we'll see where it ultimately goes for Ellie, but I still have confidence in Ellie De La Cruz. I really do, and I know you do, that's for sure. But just some thoughts I had on Ellie in regards to maybe him being like caught between no man's land right now, between taking too many pitches and then not giving him enough kind of pitches to swing at. So anyway.
David Bell actually said, comments somewhere, John Sadick was talking about it today, how he thought Ellie needs to be more aggressive. So he said that if Ellie becomes more aggressive, it'll help him be more patient. I think he's just kind of he's gotten caught in between at times where he was striking out on a lot of at-bats where the first pitch he was swinging a pitch his way out of the zone. And so he kind of overcompensated. Now he's seeing it. The more you do this, the more comfortable you get. He'll find a better balance. It's just it's going to take time for really any player, especially a player that's got as much pressure on him and sure. as much weight on him as Ellie De La Cruz has.
The good news is Ellie certainly still has the capabilities of doing what he did last year for 2.5 weeks for this ball club at some point during the season. I don't know when it's going to come. It could come next week. It might come in who knows, July. But he has the capability of carrying this team. And I say carrying relatively. You know, he has the ability to make unbelievable impact over a short period of time. Is he going to be, last thing on Ellie real fast, I know he really wasn't a big part of the thing, but like, you know, I don't know if we would hate this per se, but like, what if he's like a Jay Bruce kind of player over the course of time, you know? Like, do we want that? Maybe not, but he might end up being like the player of the month and the world's best player for 1 month, and then for 2 months he goes absent, and then he comes back for another month. The next thing you know, at the end of the year, statistics say he's a decent player, so we'll find out. But
I think if Ellie De La Cruz hits like Jay Bruce hit over the course of his Reds career, that's an all-star player when you factor in his speed. And what I believe will be his defense. I think his defense is going to be a strength the longer he plays. I think when you get into year three or four with Ellie De La Cruz, I think there's never defense is good. It's going to be one of those things where people were concerned about Ellie De La Cruz's defense at the beginning. I think it's going to become such a non-factor, but that's my opinion, of course.
That's fair. Regardless, I'll say this. If it's not at shortstop, the play that he made, obviously ranging into the outfield today, makes it pretty evident and pretty clear that if you wanted to make him a center fielder, he might end up the best center fielder in all of baseball, perhaps. What?
Did you hear that catch was a 0% catch probability for Spencer Steer?
Was it really?
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where he was positioned, to be fair. Maybe that's part of it, but I don't know. Are you talking about Ellie or Spencer Steer?
Well, they don't even have catch probability for Ellie De La Cruz because right. shortstops don't make plays there. It has nothing to do with Spencer Steer as in his actual player. It's like where the left fielder was positioned, no one could have made that catch.
Sure.
Literally right. 0%.
It was too far away. He was too far away. Yeah.
Ellie catch, which is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, no one says he has never had elite speed. All right. There was something that was posted on X.com earlier today. I don't know where you want to go with the Shane Bieber stuff. I have something quick just to say about just kind of the state of pitching in general. I think it was Passan. Passan put out a tweet earlier today that had mentioned all the players that obviously had gone down with injury. Shane Bieber's the latest. He's going to have to go and get Tommy John. But I don't know, man. I'm starting to wonder if the drive line and just the whole infatuation with velocity, velocity, velocity. Hey, how can we get 3 more miles an hour on this? How can we get 4 more miles an hour on this guy? If that's starting to catch up a little bit, because the other side of the aisle, everybody's pointing to right now, and even some of the arms, the pitchers themselves, they're not going to say it's their fault because they got hurt, of course, but they're pointing towards the pitch clock, Nick. I think that's probably a bigger, maybe better debate or a conversation. But Shane Bieber did go down. Your overall thoughts on that or the impact of what you think that might be in regards to kind of the Major League Baseball as a whole?
Yeah, I thought it was notable just because the Reds were in talks to possibly make a trade for him all offseason. Reds and Cubs, I think, were the two teams that it sounded got the hottest in talks with the Guardians on him. I agree. I don't think you're ever going to see this change, though, because like Shane Bieber already, he's earning $13 million this year. So why would you not try to be the best pitcher you could be and push your body to maybe some uncomfortable lengths? Because if you're the player, I'm probably going to get paid either way. And if I don't, I'm going to be left behind all these other guys. But I'm not trying to think of like a victory lap on the Reds not making a trade for Shane Bieber, because I don't remember what my stance was. I said I think I'd be fine with it, just depends on what you give up. But certainly in hindsight, sure. You know, going out and getting free agents and Frankie Montas and Nick Martinez really looks like the right move now. And even if those guys had gotten hurt and needed Tommy John surgery, oh, well, we threw some money at him. It didn't work. It's a lot different than, you know, whatever package it would have taken to get Shane Bieber, because the Guardians didn't even trade him. They never got enough right. of a deal. So clearly it would have cost a lot. So I just think that's something that gets missed a lot of times when we talk about trades, is the risk that the player you trade for could get hurt. Like Shane Bieber, I just think it's a cautious tale. That doesn't mean you have to go completely crazy and let's never make a trade, let's never give up a prospect. I'm not saying that, but I just think you have to be careful when you're talking about what kind of investments you're going to make in terms of keeping your prospects, trading for players, because, man, if the Reds had traded Cam Collier for Shane Bieber, could you imagine how we'd feel right now?
I agree. Yeah, we'd be more than upset. The only thing I was going to add to that, what you just stated, was that it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if I use the phrase small market, but you get what I mean when I say that. I don't think small market teams are probably going to take chances on big contracts anymore with starting pitching, largely because starting pitching, the whole identity of starting pitching is starting to slip away a little bit anyways. What you expect guys to go, what, 5-6 innings? Long gone are the days of 7, 8, 9 innings out of your starter, 200-plus innings out of your starter. You couple in the fact of the going rate for elite arms, and it's just kind of wild. You're going to put yourself in a tough spot probably there. This is what you've always preached. You gotta develop from within. You got to continue to find arms that you can run out there that you're not, you know, you're not going to overly pay. Maybe arbitration, that's fine if we got to pay for a guy through arbitration. But I just think, again, it's hard to say for a fact. I don't believe it's the clocks. I know that that's something that the pitchers are starting to point to and say, hey, look what it's doing. Look what it's doing. Look at the increase in injuries. I just have a hard time believing it's the clocks. And you know what I would say to that too? That's part of the game now. And I hate to say that in such a really, I guess, non-caring way. You got to start training for the pitch clock now. Then, if you want to prioritize maybe endurance over that extra 1 or 2 or 3 miles an hour that you're seeking, then I think that's what you have to do now. And if your teams, you had mentioned the players, you know, not worrying about it, I think more or less now it's going to be the teams that are going to have to make a decision. Hey, do we draft this guy or do we go after this guy that has, you know, he's been whatever his whole career, and then all of a sudden he did get a 3 or 4 mile an hour increase in velocity over the last few years based off the program he's throwing on. Do we want to take a chance on this guy? Because we know how this ultimately ends up going. It's different if you have a Randy Johnson, right? The guy's thrown that hard his entire life, and he's lanky. You can kind of make it out. You can understand why a guy that big could throw that hard. It's far too big of a risk at this point, in my opinion, Nick, to take chances on short guys that throw hard. And you know where I'm going to go with this? I'm going to say, we don't need to talk about the draft right now. We don't care enough about it, to be honest with you, to talk about it. But there is a guy at the top of the draft board. I can't think of the kid's name off the top of my head. The Wake Forest kid. He's probably going to be a top 5 pick for sure. Is it Burns? But nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see if that has any impact on what they decide to do.
Just a few minutes ago, MLBPA released a pretty strong statement basically saying shame on Major League Baseball for the pitch clock and is blaming the pitch clock. Yeah.
Piss off, then. Piss off.
Yeah. That's terrible.
MLBPA, you know, at some point, Nick, they needed to figure out that the game's dying. You know, the game was dying. I mean, this has been good for the game. People are more interested to go to the games. People want to watch the game. You know why the league's a piss poor league half the time? Because one team can spend $1 billion and the other team can only spend $10. It's because of the MLBPA. It's because the players, they don't want to ever talk about, oh, what's good for the game. They only care about the guaranteed contracts and all that. And you know what? I'm all for the player getting their fair share. But I don't want to sit here and talk about some pitch clock and that's the reason that all these guys are going down. Piss off. How about that one?
Yeah, I'm with you. MLBPA got, I think, a lot of support back in the lockout. I think everyone sided with the MLBPA, and I think overall they should. But I don't think they're going to get that same support this time. The pitch clock was the best thing baseball's done for the game. And look, you got to adjust to it. That's ridiculous. And the, like, right after a big injury like this, it just seems like it's a real cheap shot. Like, this is just,
yeah,
I don't. Yeah, this is.
Well,
not...
what happened to Hunter Green? Was that, what was the pitch clock? Is that what Hunter Green got hurt with earlier? I mean, what about all the other guys that have blown their arms out throughout the years before the pitch clock came around? Like, let's not act like this is something brand new. Yeah, there might be a spike in it, but I'd also say there might be a spike in it because 4 years ago we had something called the driveline program that everybody thought was dogma, and that's fine. I'm not even having nothing against the driveline program. I got nothing against guys that are trying to increase velocity, but at some point, let's just use our brains. Back in the, 10, 15 years ago, how many guys threw 97 miles an hour plus? Now it's like if you don't have three or four guys in your bullpen that throw 97 plus, what the hell are we doing? So let's just be honest. There's so much more wear and tear on guys' arms now than there ever used to be before. Torque's kind of a big thing. I don't know if they've studied physics at all. I failed physics, but I still picked up on that. Anyways, I didn't think I was going to rant tonight. I don't want to rant. I just at some point want Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Union to kind of realize, hey, like, this is good for the game. Let's not piss all over it. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it got pretty strong support by fans. I can't tell you how many casual baseball fans that I've talked to that have said, wow, I really have liked watching baseball. And yeah, that's not it. Not it to do after an injury like that. It's a cheap shot, and I think you're going to lose a lot of the support that you had from the fans, good old MLBPA on that one.
Yeah. Could you imagine increasing the speed limit on I-75 to 100 miles an hour and then coming out the next day and being like, yeah, you know, it's because you guys cut the sheriff's budget, and that's why there's more wrecks. It's like, oh, really? Okay. Why don't we blame ice cream for murders too while we're at it, MLBPA? Keep it up. You guys are hot.
All right, let's get you caught up on all of the Reds minor league action from Saturday. We'll start off with AAA Louisville. They lost 5-4 to Gwinnett. That's the Braves AAA affiliate. The Bats now 4-4 on the season. Lyon Richardson started this game. He struggled with his command. He only threw 26 of his 53 pitches for strikes, and he didn't make it out of the second inning. Final line for Lyon Richardson, just 1 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, 3 walks. He did strike out 4 batters. Lyon's max velocity was down a bit. It came in at 95.4 miles per hour. Sam Moll making another rehab assignment game. He only got one batter out, unfortunately. He threw 19 pitches, and while he didn't walk anyone, his command was especially off early in the count. Moll only faced 3 batters. He gave up a fairly weak single. He struck out Sandy Leon, and then he gave up a hard-hit double down the line, and his day was done. Moll's velocity still down a little bit, down about 2 miles per hour. Casey Legomena threw the ball well for the Bats on Saturday. He went 2 1/3 innings, just gave up 2 hits, 1 unearned run, walked 1, and struck out 2. And then on the offensive side, Blake Dunn had a great day. He was 3 for 4 with a walk and also stole a base, his 4th stolen base already on the year. A forgetful day, however, for Reese Hines. He was 0 for 5, 4 strikeouts, and he made 3 errors in right field. Hines hitting just 133 with a 624 OPS so far. I did go back and watch all of Reese Hines' errors. Maybe some really sicko behavior after 1 a.m. to do that. But nonetheless, I'll bring you the Reese Hines report. Maybe the 3 errors aren't as bad as just looking at the box score would say. The first one was an error trying to throw out a runner at third base. P.J. Higgins playing third base for the Bats on Saturday probably really should have been able to catch the ball as it bounced up. The second error, Hines got a really bad jump on. He froze, and then he kind of got caught in between trying to play it off the bounce or slide, and the ball got behind him. And then the third error was just some really bad camera work by Gwinnett. I think that Hines overthrew the cutoff man, but I really have no idea how offline it was. So 3 errors, but the 3 errors weren't just all absolutely atrocious plays from Hines. But nonetheless, a tough afternoon and evening for Reese Hines. Mike Ford, he was 0-for-4 with a walk. Michael Trotwine, the catcher, he hit his 2nd home run already of the year. And then Connor Capel, he had a really good day. He stayed hot. 3-for-5, a pair of doubles. Capel hitting 375 OPS over 1,400. Chattanooga Lookouts, they lost 5-2 to Birmingham. Lookouts 0-2 to start the season. A decent debut for starting pitcher Julian Aguilar. He went four innings, gave up two hits, two earned runs, one walk, and two strikeouts. Jose Torres, 1-for-4 on the offensive side. Tyler Callahan, 2-for-5 with a double. Austin Hendrick, 0-for-4. All right, High A, the Dayton Dragons, and that powerful offense, that really exciting all-star prospect caliber offense. They had a great day on Saturday. They won 8-5 over Lansing. Dragons now 1-1 on the season. Running through the box score, Leo Balcazar was 1-for-5. Sal Stewart, 0-for-2 with a pair of walks. Cam Collier hit his first home run as a Dayton Dragon. He had a three-run shot. Hector Rodriguez, 0-for-2 with the walk. Jay Allen looking for a bounce-back 2024 season. He had a great day on Saturday. 2-for-3, drove in two runs, had a walk, and stole a base. Ethan O'Donnell, 1-for-3 with the walk. Victor Costa, 1-for-4 with a stolen base. Cade Hunter, the catcher that also will play in the outfield at times, he hit his first home run. He drove in two. He had a walk and a stolen base as well. One notable note, Carlos Jorge, he did not play in this game. He left Friday's game with a possible leg injury. I didn't see any further report on him. And then down to low A, the Daytona Tortugas, they won 6-2 over St. Lucie. Tortugas now 1-1 on the season. Alfredo Duno was 1-for-4 with the walk. Carlos Sanchez 2-for-4 with the walk. And Eastmith Pineda 0-for-3 with the walk. One notable pitcher, Anier Laureano, he retired all four batters that he faced, striking out two. His velocity topped out at 98.4. One of the batters he faced was actually JD Martinez, who the Mets just signed. He's kind of getting ready. I think he's going to join them probably in their next series. Laureano got him to fly out on a sharp liner to left field. Laureano, I talked with Bryce Spalding a little bit about him on our podcast the other day. He's a guy that it seems the Reds are really high on. He was on the spring breakout roster. Some information from Reds fan Brandon. Laureano's been up to 100 miles per hour with a plus slider and a low 90s changeup. Walks have plagued him, but his stuff is top tier. So Laureano, kind of a fun pitcher to watch. Our friend at Reds Daily 4 actually posted on Twitter his entire outing from Saturday. Looks really good. Looks like a really fun pitcher to watch. So he'll definitely be one of the guys that we'll be tracking this season down in Daytona. All right, well, the Reds and Mets rubber game Sunday, 1:40 p.m. This will be on Bally Sports Ohio. It'll be Andrew Abbott going up against Sean Manea of the Mets. Sean Manea, he was fantastic in his Mets debut against the Tigers. He only gave up one hit over six innings, walked two, and struck out eight. Mets signed Manea to a two-year, $28 million contract this offseason after he declined his $12.5 million option with the Giants. The Giants had kind of him going back and forth between being a starter and a bulk reliever, but he's kind of looking for a little bit of a bounce-back year, and the Mets clearly believe in him. He's only made two career appearances against the Reds, just one start, a 3.24 ERA. Only one appearance ever at Great America Ballpark. It was out of the bullpen last year with the Giants. He gave up three runs, two of them earned, and 2 1/3 last season. Notable Reds against Manea, Candelario is 3-for-13, does have a home run. Ellie De La Cruz is 1-for-1, and Tyler Stevenson is 1-for-2. So probably expect to see Stuart Fairchild in the lineup against Lefty, coming off his nice game off the bench on Saturday, and your typical lineup for the Reds against a lefty. All right, for the Reds, it'll be Andrew Abbott. He's coming off a really strong debut in Philly when he went 5 2/3 innings, just allowing two runs. Abbott's only game he's ever faced the Mets was the third-to-last game last year. Of course, Andrew Abbott was pretty well out of gas, we felt, last year, so hard to really judge a whole lot of results on that. But Abbott didn't make it out of the third inning in that game. All right, well, thanks so much, as always, for listening to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all your support. If you've not yet subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever you listen to this podcast, make sure you do that now. Also, be sure to subscribe to Chatterbox Sports over on YouTube for our live post-game shows and all of the other great content that Chatterbox Sports has. If you could leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast, would appreciate that. And then also be sure to tell a friend about Chatterbox Reds. Daily recaps every single day, even on the weekends. If you know a Reds fan, I think they'll like our show. So just let them know. We love the good old word of mouth. It is, I believe, still effective. Well, I hope that you have a fantastic Sunday. We'll talk again on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube around 4:10 p.m. on Sunday. And then, of course, if you missed that, in the podcast feed on Monday morning, bright and early. Go Reds!